It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Here we go. This is the same time.
Yep.
But for them, it is the time after the time after.
Yeah, and while they're listening to this, we are recording a new podcast?
Probably not. We probably have just finished recording. I probably won't put it up until... I might, though. That would be funny.
But it won't be out for a week. And then we'll record another one, and it won't be out for 2 weeks.
All because...
of me.
William and his terrible need to... Something. Something terrible. It's taking 2 weeks. Anyway, hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that started off as actually an independent study in breakdancing on the streets of Trenton, New Jersey, where William and I grew up. It's been a long, complicated evolution to the point we've reached here. Originally, it was just the two of us and a boombox and a cardboard box flattened out.
Arguing about who should be actually breakdancing.
Yes.
And really, neither of us ended up doing
two guys,
any breakdancing.
I don't believe we ever did, no. But there was a lot. We did a little beatboxing. We kept... you know, nodding to the other one on the beat and stuff.
A few other people tried, but we basically...
One hobo stole our box one time. We got another box, though.
Trenton.
Poor kids on the streets of Trenton can still find a second cardboard box. Growing up on the streets. The mean streets.
That's the thing that's making me laugh the most, is that... It's funny how that so absolutely does not apply to either of us, but in two different ways.
But no, but also now I'm seeing the two of us just dressed up as Jay and Silent Bob, and we look remarkably close.
Yeah, I guess.
Except you're the silent one.
Yes.
Bob
and Silent
Jay. I'm Tony.
Jay. And I'm William, and this... will be
holy
episode
crap.
This will be 181.
No.
Yes.
No.
180. 181.
We just had 180.
Yeah. So this is 181.
No, this will be 182.
Why?
Because, remember, we're not playing it next week. Oh, wait. No, sorry. Oh, God. Damn. I hate time travel.
Yes. We're doing them in order just to avoid this kind of confusion.
Yes. Sorry. So we will be recording us. This is 181.
Yes, 181, which will
fucking hate time
which
travel.
Will air next week to us, but then next week we'll be recording 182 and 183.
I'm seriously getting it backwards where I'm like, no, we'll be...
It's my fault.
We'll be in the past next week. And I'm like, well, recording will...
It's my fault because I originally suggested to you that today...
we record this one and the third one.
Yeah, and then next week we record that next week's and the fourth one. So
which
that,
I was willing to do because I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, but that we decided not
no,
to.
No, I would
that.
Have had just as much trouble just in the opposite way. But seriously, I'm at the point where like all the episodes just air normally, and in my mind, we're jumping back and forth in time. It's a mess.
This is episode 181.
I had this experience at work. I have a coworker whose last name is C Slack.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Where are they from?
I don't know.
Because
anyway,
there's some C-Slacks back in Melcher.
Don't care.
Well, anyway, I never met C-Slacks from anywhere else but Melcher. Maybe they're related to people from Melcher.
I'm sure they are.
We'll find out.
Anyway,
you should ask them. if they're from Melcher, or if they're related to someone from Melcher.
My concern, when she and I started on the same day.
What's her first name?
Not saying. I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's true. Tell me later, because maybe it's someone I know.
Well, I think she married into it, but.
Oh, never mind that.
But I was concerned, because her name sounds like a certain type of creature from a certain Sid and Marty Krofft show. And I was worried that I would call her Sleestak. At first, I thought it would be awesome, but then I'm like, no, that's just mean. So I tried really hard.
Well, if her husband's from Melcher, he heard that a lot.
Well, see, and I don't think she ever did. That's the weird thing. Because of today. Because now, I recently moved. Our jobs didn't intersect that much, but I recently moved, and while they still don't, I sit like 5-6 feet from her. And unlike all the other people who were in that training class, for some reason she and I have kind of maintained a work friendship. Like, we'll still say hi to each other in the hall and stuff like that. So we still know each other. So today, I had realized recently, and I told her today, not only have I not done that, but in my head now, if I ever talk about Land of the Lost, I talk about the Sleestak. So not only did I not screw up her last name, it has subsumed my memories of the Sid and Marty Krofft show.
Yeah, Sleestak. Yeah. It's an interesting name. I've never heard it outside of Melcher. Never. I mean, I'm sure it's outside of Melcher, but I'm just saying I never heard.
How did the Sleestaks do that?
I don't.
Very weird.
I don't know.
It was scary as all hell. I got really scared by the Sleestaks. To be fair, I was also kind of scared of Chaka, but that was for other reasons. So for those of you just joining us, do you remember Land of the Lost?
I don't remember much about it, actually. We watched it quite a bit, but I don't remember very much.
I remember bits and pieces. Anyway, those of you who've never listened to us before, we recorded this last week, so for reasons that will become clear if you listen to other episodes. Anyway, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address. That email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All the good people of the kingdom write into that email address with emails detailing questions, comments, topics, little brief things, you know, simple. No big whoop. And the hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. Those note cards manifest physically within the hat and are drawn out at random by us. We read them on the air, discuss them till we get bored, do all this for about an hour, that's the whole show. That's it.
That's it.
So how was your week?
I'm trying to think of what might be happening between here and there. And I can't think of a whole lot. I mean, we probably continued to watch some of the shows that we were watching. Like, as I discussed in the last episode, we started watching Arrow, and maybe we'll continue to watch it.
We'll hopefully finish Full Moon. I'll keep playing Red Dead. I didn't talk about this, so I have a thing in Red Dead Redemption. I've talked about that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've been talking about it before. I have a problem with horses dying. I keep getting my horses killed. Today it happened again. But I'm not sure it was my fault this time. Either it wasn't my fault, or it was my fault on a much bigger psychological and emotional scale. My horse committed suicide.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, I rode it to the edge of a river where there was, like, a bridge, but it's not completed, so I couldn't get across. And so I got off the horse, and I was looking around to see what was going on, because I was not expecting this. While I was doing this, the horse just trotted up next to me, trotted past me, and jumped into the river and died.
Well, I wouldn't take it too personally.
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm like, because he's like the 7th horse I've lost. So I'm like, did he hear the rumors and just got so stressed out?
Yep.
He was like, screw it, I'll just go now.
Yep. Go on my terms.
Exactly. Yep. I can't take the stress anymore.
Right.
Because he seriously, like, he just walked past me and died. into the water and made a little cry when he went down, too. And I could see his corpse just floating down there.
How sad.
It was weird.
You know, we might... I don't know for sure, but... the sort of Game of the Year edition of Arkham Origins is supposed to be out. Maybe it's already out. Maybe it was already out last week while our listeners are listening. When they listened to last week's episode, or maybe it's out by now that our listeners are listening. I don't know. But whenever it's out, we're probably going to get it and be playing it. So.
Well, then if it was already out, you already have it. So good job.
Yeah, by the time people are listening to this, we probably do have it.
How do you like it?
Well, you know, we've anticipated playing it because we thought it would be really cool. But you pointed out that since Rocksteady's not doing it, a lot of people didn't like it, and maybe we won't like it either. But I don't think there's, you know, there are going to be differences that we're going to notice or care
I would
about.
Be unsurprised if you liked it. I feel like the things that people disliked about it are not the kind of things you would dislike about it.
Yeah.
And things that people didn't care so much about are things you're going to like about it.
Yeah. That's
especially based on the things I know you don't like about Arkham Asylum and Arkham City.
Yeah, I think that's probably... I think you're probably right.
And I also know how cool you think Batman Year One is, so...
Batman Year One?
Yeah.
You mean Frank Miller's Batman Year One?
Yeah.
It's all right. I'm not overwhelmed by it.
I thought you were pretty into that, and this...
Well, it was good.
This isn't based off of that material, but it's essentially that time period.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be fun. But I don't know. I can't, for the life of me, think of... Seems like there's always something going on, but I can't remember what's going to be happening between here and there.
Oh, I should have talked about it last time, too. This last weekend, for me, in Earth People time, I played in the game I get to play in again.
What's that?
My Swashbucklers of the Seven Skies that
oh.
Dave of Id's
oh,
wife
oh,
is
yeah,
running.
Oh, yeah,
I got to
right,
play in
right,
that
right.
again. That's going pretty well. I've discovered we're basically the medieval fantasy version of the A-Team. Because we keep like making up new disguises and stuff.
Well, who are you? Which one are you? Are you BA? Are you Mad?
I'm a little bit Hannibal in this because they keep being my plans. But I'm also the one who's doing the most like disguises and pretending to be other. I'm inventing
so,
all these.
So face people. And
yeah, a little bit of that. Okay. Oh, but Hannibal used to do some of that too. So
yeah, I guess.
Tell.
Wait, Face didn't do... He was called Face because he didn't have to do anything.
No,
kind of
sometimes
things.
He did, though. I remember that, too.
Really?
Yeah, I remember him putting on glasses and a fake mustache and stuff.
Because, I mean, the reason they called him Face was because he was the front guy. He was the guy that people would see.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
he was affable and all this stuff, and so that's why they called him that. So, but I don't remember him putting on very many disguises.
I remember him doing it. I don't know
well,
if he did it that
maybe,
often.
Maybe he did, maybe he did.
Anyway...
I don't think she likes what you're doing.
Usually not. So it was really fun, and actually we had this wonderful, wonderful moment where I came up with a plan that happened to involve telling the truth and was actually going to be beneficial to people who weren't me. And David's character was shocked by this and very excited because David's character loves doing the right thing. And he thought this was a great turn. And I said, no. I do what is simplest and most efficient for me. In this case, it happens to involve telling the truth, and it happens to have unrelated side effects that are good for other people. It's not why I'm doing it. And in fact, near the end, I set a fire to a large estate for essentially no reason. We had to sort of disappear out the back, and no one was even actively searching for us. But in order to make really sure no one was paying attention, I set the whole place on fire. After having killed a lot of people, but no, it's being pretty fun.
Good,
I'm enjoying that.
Good.
After the video we watched in between, I'm thinking about buying Trials Fusion.
Really?
Yeah, the only thing that made me nervous about it is the difficulty, But I really enjoy. I used to play a PS2 game called Kinetica, and it was one of the really older games. And I really enjoyed it. It was a sci-fi racing kind of thing. I just kind of like those. But we'll see. I've known about it for a while, so. All right, should we hat this?
Yeah, let's do.
Ezzy. Why is it any other time when I do this to you, you will immediately yell at me? But when we're on the air, you know, and so you don't make any noise. Seriously, she's always yelling at me when I bug her with anything. And this time she will snap at me and she'll jump and stuff, but she won't make any sound. Because she knows we're on the radio.
That's what you're trying to do, is get her to make a sound. Well, she also, I'm here. Maybe I have something to do.
I don't know.
Dear Hatlex.
Hatlex. I know who this is.
Ouch. Please explain nerd rage. Is it something I do not understand? No, it is something. Sorry. This is Sir Guido, by the way. I'm sorry I'm totally butchering your question, Sir Guido. Let me start over. Please explain nerd rage. It is something I do not understand and am looking for insight. Seems like I've heard of this, but I'm not sure I know what it's referring to exactly. Although the contexts I've heard it in are when a person who would be a self-described geek is upset about something geek-oriented, and they're really upset about it. Very much like road rage, where a person's totally lost it.
Yes.
And it often relates to
screwing with canon.
Yeah, like
rebooting something from your childhood in a horrible way.
Yes. Maybe there was some nerd rage when Marvel announced that Thor is going to lose control, or, you know, he's not going to control the hammer anymore, and it's going to pass to a woman, and now the Thor will be a woman. Maybe someone
was
angry about that.
There was a great deal of nerd rage around the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, I suppose so. And if that's what you're talking about, Sir Guido, even though I've only sort of recently been made aware of this phenomena myself, I imagine it's like any other kind of rage. There's something going on where something's very important to this person, or like road rage, for example. I think that there's a lot of things going on with road rage. I don't think it's simply someone does something and you get really angry with them. I think when anything that makes somebody just completely irrational and blind with rage, unless it involves someone actually being physically harmed or killed or something, if it's something like someone cuts you off or someone changes a story that you like, there are obviously other things going on underneath the surface that have nothing at all to do with the thing that you're raging about, or, you know, that you say you're raging about. Do you follow what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for each individual person, it's something different. Whatever the thing is that really is bothering them.
I feel there is, rage can be totally normal and justified and not displaced. It doesn't come up real often. But, for example, I think one could well express seeing my whole family get slaughtered in front of me rage.
Yes.
And that would make a lot of sense. Well, and you wouldn't say, this is about something other than your family getting slaughtered.
Right.
But, so I think nerd rage and road rage, which I think are distinct, but are both instances of somebody placing importance on something that's not that important.
Yeah, that's right.
But and being convinced it is for some reason, which often has to do with displacement.
Yes.
So in the case of road rage, obviously, that guy cutting you off isn't that, like, oh, that's kind of annoying.
Well,
it's not a thing.
If you felt like it was dangerous, you've got kids in the car, maybe. Yeah. But if it was just an annoyance and you're seething mad about it, there's obviously something else going on that has nothing really to do with that.
And the significance of the movie that has the sequel that's terrible, it's not that important in that you can just ignore that sequel and just go on loving the thing you loved. But it's important because in your mind, you're attached to that. And so the world of that film, which now includes the sequel that you didn't like, is part of your world. Obviously not to the delusional state, I'm saying, but just the fact that whole thing. I'll stick with Star Wars because the prequel sucked.
Well, it's taken as a personal affront.
Yes, that is part of your self-identity, those movies.
Yep.
And the public image now of those movies includes the shitty extra three ones.
Yep.
And so that reflects on you. Yep. Obviously, in your own world, you can ignore the shitty extra three ones and just go on with life. Mm-hmm. But it has publicly tarnished your image, essentially.
Yeah.
Which, and this is all very semi-conscious. I mean, no nerd is going to be mad and say, those new movies have tarnished my image. Are you George Lucas? No, shut up. Like, that doesn't happen.
No. They just get mad.
It's a semi-conscious thing, yes.
They just get angry. That's
because,
right.
Because I love it so much, I don't like to see it hurt this way.
Yeah.
Which, that becomes a whole thing. Because, you know what, technically... Well, actually, Star Wars is a bad example. Star Wars is the only time where I'm like, that didn't damage the first movies, but he did. Might have a little nerd rage.
Yeah, essentially, what's going on is the person, their identity is so wrapped up in this thing that when it is threatened, they feel personally threatened.
Yes. Making fun of something that you like. Another example.
Mm-hmm.
Not loving Joss Whedon with absolutely every cell in your being. That disturbs some people and throws them into a nerd rage.
See, this gets me into a lot of trouble, as I'm sure you are aware.
Hell, it gets me in trouble.
Oh, it gets me in trouble all the time.
The producer and I are... We have cooled on Joss. Mostly for his shitty feminism.
No, I mean that there are very few things that I have my identity wrapped up in that other people... You know, people can talk... I've talked a lot about DC and Batman in recent weeks, recent months. But anybody can say whatever they want about DC, Batman, or whatever, and it's not going to bother me because it doesn't have anything to do with me or who I am as a person. But
Batman's stupid. Anybody I have who likes a lot Batman of Batman is stupid.
I have a lot of friends who are fans of things wherein their own personal identity is pretty heavily wrapped up in it. And
is it about me and Saved by the Bell again?
No, I'm just I'm not used to thinking that other people. I don't think this way, so I'm not used to understanding that other people do. So I will just casually say things about things that I might not like or that I might think are silly or stupid or whatever else and totally offend this person, and then they never want to speak to me again.
That's happened to me with you 5 times.
When I don't mean any harm, and I don't mean any offense, and I'm not saying anything about them personally, but you know, I just... I can't think of a single thing a person couldn't talk about around me in any way they wanted, and I'm not going to take it personally because I don't feel that personally wrapped up in it. But a lot of people, and it's not just nerds, by the way.
No, nerd rage is a particular kind, but it basically is whatever you like rage.
Well, more, I feel like I like things. I'm talking.
No, but more, that's more, what I'm saying is there's as many flavors as there are things that people like.
Yeah. Right. That's right. So
sports teams.
Yeah, it could be sports. It could be, it could be alcohol. A person really likes to drink. They really like alcohol. And
no, alcohol rage is a different thing.
No. But if I say something about, well, I don't drink or anything disparaging about alcohol in any way or that or distancing myself from it, there are certain people who really like to drink who are immediately offended by that and won't,
that's true,
won't have anything to do with it.
I got really mad at the things you said against cocaine that one
time.
I have a lot of my identity wrapped up in cocaine.
Certain industries, certain political philosophies, certain religious beliefs, not just religion, but religious belief, like reincarnation, for example. I don't believe in reincarnation. We talked about this.
I'll punch you.
We talked about this when we were talking about karma, remember? There are a lot of people who have very strong feelings about karma and reincarnation who might have heard our conversation and been offended because of how casually we sort of shot down some of those concepts.
That was the episode with the most death threats so far. The other one was vomit goblins.
But you see what I'm saying? I mean, there anything like this that a person really ties their identity up in, boy, it can, if you even look at it funny, it can make them very angry.
Like me in the podcast.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that.
Yeah.
I don't want that thing to happen again that happened when I mentioned it last time. So let's not talk about that. But yeah, that's, you know, nerd rage is just one manifestation of a broader
that joke
psychological.
Got weird.
Nerd rage is just one manifestation of a broader psychological and sociological phenomenon. It's really about
record,
identity.
Mine and William's relationship is in no way physically abusive. I want to say that up front. It is emotionally and verbally abusive only to the degree that you hear on the podcast, and I stand by that level of abuse. Which is a little creepy there.
But identity is a funny thing when you think about it. I mean, it's people treat identity like it's...
Are we talking the John Cusack movie?
No, we're talking the general concept of identity. When people... In the West, the concept of identity and individual, you know, identity, whatever, it's a pretty big deal in our culture. And it's not a big deal in every culture. But it's treated like it's some kind of... This is part of what it means to be human in all times and places. To have this strict, rigid identity.
Used to be the word... Shoot, I learned about this in some of my anthropology classes. Strict ego boundaries. There we go.
Yeah,
strict
ego
boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. But what proves that it's not an inherent human characteristic or universal culturally is the fact that people are so sensitive to it being threatened. Because if it was so ingrained, that would be impossible. You know what I'm saying? It just wouldn't... People know that it's variable. People know it can change. And so they're afraid that something's going to come along and change it. And so the Star Wars fans are afraid that the identity they've built up based on the first three films that George Lucas made, chronologically speaking, is going to be assaulted by these other three films that completely screw up all the continuity and it screws up all of the characters and everything.
Hayden Christensen's a bitch.
So now they can't go out and say, I'm a Star Wars fan, and know that people, A, will either know what they're talking about, or B, if people don't know what they're talking about, they can have proper disdain for those people. Whereas now, if people think they're talking about the prequels, that's a legitimate thing for them
yes.
to think, and now that's bad because that means they're not in control of that.
Look, you're making me look like an asshole.
But identities are constructed. They're artificial. They're cultural. They're not. You're not born with it. There's no such thing as an identity that's like... You know, part of this comes with this notion people have of like an immortal soul and almost this notion that your soul existed before you did and it got like put into your body and now it's riding around in your body like it's some kind of vehicle. Now, I'm not saying anything about people who believe that. That's your belief, that's fine. But there are some implications of that and that are tied to identity where this is your essence. This is, you see what I'm saying? This is some unchanging part of you that you have to protect. Everything else can change. Everything else can be challenged, but not this. And when it is, it's really going to make you angry. And, you know, I think there are real problems with that approach.
Translated, that means get over it. I've had some concerns about my identity recently. So at work, I'm still me. And I do a lot of things, partially because I like attention, go figure, but more so because I like to entertain myself. So I do things like, if I've got an empty cardboard box for whatever reason, it's going on my head, at least for a couple minutes, as a hat. Sometimes if I have to turn a corner in like our little hallway thing, I will hold my arms out and try and angle it as though I were an airplane. Things like this. Today, I had a little figurine somebody gave me that was a little armored minion from Despicable Me.
Mm-hmm.
And I rubber banded that figure to my forehead and walked around that way. Just like everything was normal, but I had that on my head. People who know me, regularly work with me and stuff, understand this is just my own... me being... like, anybody who's a regular listener here probably shouldn't find this terribly surprising.
No, probably not.
But I wonder sometimes now if people who work near me but not with me think I might be developmentally disabled.
Why?
Because they know I have a lower level job. You know, I'm doing a lot of the manual work and stuff and things. And I'm just this guy who amuses himself by rubber banding minions to his head.
Mm-hmm.
Or I carried around a pirate sword while I was doing the copies one day.
And these strike you as things that developmentally disabled people would do?
These strike me as childlike behavior that a lot of people associate in an adult as something of someone with a developmental disability.
Hmm. And so has someone said something or done something?
No, not yet.
So this is a spontaneous identity crisis.
This is me wondering, yeah.
Mild
crisis. It's very mild. I'm not changing shit. Don't get me wrong. In fact, that's the thing. It's a crisis partially because part of me thinks that's hilarious if people think that. I told
the producer, let's keep that going.
And she hearkened back to an episode of The American Office where we brought in a new HR person and somebody, as a joke, told her that a certain member of accounting was part of a like a work training program thing where they help people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so she spends like the first four episodes thinking that and trying to be really positive to him. And he isn't super bright, but he's certainly not disabled or anything. So he thinks she's got the hots for him. And it keeps being stuff like, oh, you drive your own car? They let you drive? He's like, yeah, I got my license. Like, I think that's awesome. He's like, I think she likes me. And so she was like, so you're like Kevin. And I was like, yeah, I like to think I'm secretly capable. And I like to think I'm enjoying it a little more than Kevin. But but it's just weird.
Well, identity is a tricky thing. I think...
if you're hearing weird background noise, apparently the producer is watching a video right, like, 10 feet from us. Or she's watching one in the bedroom really loud. I don't know which.
I guess I do tend to think that most people would be better off themselves. They'd be happier if they understood that identity is something that at least can be fluid. it doesn't...
sometimes I pretend I'm bourbon.
It doesn't have to be something... you know, we live in difficult times and uncertain times, and a lot of people derive quite a bit of comfort from something that's stable and predictable and that they think is unchanging.
Like our podcast.
But there's hardly anything that truly is unchanging, so it's probably...
like our podcast.
It's probably better to try to find some kind of encouragement from the way things are, which is changing and sometimes getting better. Sometimes not, but, you know, where you see one thing is sort of not going well, you can look somewhere else and see that this is getting better, and you can take some comfort in that, rather than finding solace in things that you think are never going to change, because there is no such thing. Everything changes. Everything's going to change. And if you take a lot of comfort in something that that you are only tricking yourself into thinking is permanent, you're going to set yourself up for some serious disappointment and probably some kind of rage.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Willy Bummer, the world's most depressing motivational speaker.
What?
Willy Bummer will be touring...
What was depressing about that?
Ohio.
What next was month. Depressing about that?
Well, you can't change that, so you just have to live with it.
It's embrace. You embrace
change. You
can't
have stability ever, so you might as well.
Well, why value?
In the words of Jesse Hyatt, fuck it. Willy Bummer will be touring Ohio in the month of September. For tickets, go to willybummer.net.
I don't. Why do you are you calling it a bummer though?
.com was taken.
I don't understand.
Mostly because it was just boring.
Oh, okay.
And most motivational speakers, the whole point, you don't even have to say anything useful, just be not boring.
Well, I never claimed to be a motivational speaker, obviously.
See, that is something the world's most depressing motivational speaker would say.
Or a person who just simply isn't a motivational speaker.
I don't follow. This is where we find out that I live in a world where I literally believe that every person I see just moonlights as a motivational speaker.
But you know exactly what I'm saying because you yourself are very much, you embrace chaos in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a lot, you know.
If I could embrace chaos, I'd never leave the house.
You know what I'm saying. You're the first person to stand up and say, look, people, there
was way funnier in my head than
there,
I think it should
there
have
is
been.
No point in setting this thing up as some kind of light lamppost that you can hold on to in the hurricane. There's just no point thinking of it like
you
that.
You might be mixing me up with Moses.
No.
People do that sometimes.
You know what I'm
it
saying.
It was a cow.
You know what I'm saying.
I do, but I don't need to acknowledge it because my identity's not wrapped up in that.
Good. See? There you go. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly
but
what I'm saying.
But when I say it, it's funny because I'm a much better motivational speaker. You anyway,
know, it reminds me.
Willybummer.net.
It reminds me that I saw something
tickets
on.
Tickets are cheap because we're desperate.
Google Plus today about there's this.
You didn't see something on Google Plus. Nobody sees anything on Google Plus.
I did. There was
you
a.
You and the six other members.
I forget the name of the guy who suggested it, but there's something called. It's a model for different types of love. And it's based on kind of a triangle.
I've seen those, and they have different ones based on specific porn stars.
No.
And they're made out of silicone.
It's like
usually.
A triangle, and each side of the triangle, one side is intimacy, the other side is commitment, and the third side is passion. Okay, so if you don't have any sides of the triangle, that there's it's not a relationship that involves love of any sort. But let's say
it's also a shitty triangle.
Let's say you have, let's say you have. Intimacy, but
I have intimacy.
But no, but you don't have the two other sides of the triangle that
no
are
commitment, no
commitment and passion.
Passion.
Then
that's weird.
Then that's
my mom, basically.
No, that's infatuation or something. No, passion. I'm sorry, passion without the other two. That's infatuation.
That I would buy.
Okay, and let's see. If you've got commitment and intimacy, but no passion, that's like a really intimate friendship or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, you've got a different iteration for, you know, one side of the triangle, these two sides, and so on and so forth. And so I don't remember who the psychologist was that came up with this, but someone posted it on Google Plus, and they asked what people thought of it. And I said, how's passion being defined here? And they gave a sort of an excerpt from this psychologist about what passion was. And it involved...
butt stuff?
No, like an obsession, being obsessed with somebody not being able to, you can't stop thinking about the person. And also you want the emotion to be reciprocated, and it could be sexual or not, but it's just, you have got to get this person's attention and they've got to reciprocate how you're feeling and you're thinking about this person all the time.
Okay.
And my feeling on that was that, boy, that's, to me, that's building in a very unhealthy element to what we're calling love. I mean, do we... Because for some versions of, like, the one that had the whole triangle was something called a consummate love or something. Like, the ultimate love between, I don't know, two people who are going to live the rest of their life together or something. And it seems to me that if that's how you're defining passion, that you've got this kind of unhealthy, obsessive element in there. And do we really need to do that? And it relates to this identity thing because it seems to me that that's what we're talking about, where having a relationship with this person becomes a huge aspect of your identity, such that you feel personally, almost existentially threatened if the relationship isn't going precisely the way you want it to go. And that's not healthy. I mean, that should not be considered an element of normal human amorous relationships. I mean, do you think, am I wrong about that? Or, I mean, what do you think?
I don't know. I think the more you described it, the more narrow you got in the view perspective. Because I would say I have passion by the definition you gave of passion with my wife. But I would say I still do fine with elements of change. That being said, if I felt that my feelings were not being reciprocated by her for any extended period of time, I would have a great deal of problem with it. I do feel that's different than me saying anything in the relationship changes from what I want it to be precisely. Then I would flip out, you know.
Right, but
I can see how the thing you describe, that they describe as passion, can be a not good thing under certain circumstances.
Right, but there's specifically the way this thing is defined is an involuntary compulsion. I mean that's another couple words that are thrown in there for these definitions. Mm-hmm. Okay, what you're talking about, if Trish suddenly wasn't reciprocating certain things, that would bother you not because she suddenly isn't indulging a compulsion, but because you guys have an understanding. You know what I'm saying? There's an expectation that comes with certain expressly stated promises, basically. You see what I'm saying? It's not just that you have a compulsion for her to act a certain way and she's acting that way and then she stops. I mean, that might be part of it. I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm saying that's... You don't have a codependent relationship with your wife, as far as I can tell. So it seems to me that if it was bothering you, it would be more substantive than just... It's just bothering you for some kind of compulsive reason. I mean, does that make sense, or am I not? Am I using all the wrong words?
It seems vaguely semantic. I mean, I get sort of what you're going for. I think you may be reading something more into their definition than I am. Well, I mean, again, what you are describing, definitely an issue.
Let me give an alternative and maybe it'll help.
All right.
Understand.
Historically, this doesn't get us anywhere, but go for it.
One thing I suggested was they use bondedness. Like, you feel like this person's fortunes are inextricably bound to your own, and their happiness is similar to your happiness.
And you don't think intimacy and commitment cover that?
No, not necessarily. Because intimacy, I mean, you know, you and I have an intimate relationship, but I wouldn't, you know, it's
intellectual. But you wouldn't say we're bonded?
I would say we are, but we could have that intimacy without being particularly bonded. The thing is, you can achieve a certain amount of intimacy with a person just you first get to know them. For example, you have a ton of things in common, and you can talk about a lot of things, and you can share a lot of intellectual intimacy, and you don't even really know each other, and maybe you don't even have plans to know each other beyond that.
And that would eliminate the commitment. That's why I said a combination of both intimacy and commitment,
right,
I think,
but
achieve the bondedness that you're talking
about. But I know people who I have an intimate relationship with and a commitment, But I don't feel like if... See, that's probably why it's not a very good word.
Well, or I have very specific definitions of commitment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me...
I'm talking about an emotional commitment. There are situations where the very nature of the relationship... Let's say this was our job. We were professional podcasters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You and I would have a commitment that wouldn't necessarily be an emotional commitment that I like to think we have in our relationship.
Right, 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 right.
Even if we got along, you know.
Right, I mean, right, right, right.
But if we had that, I believe the combination of the intimacy and that sort of commitment, that sort of emotional commitment, makes the kind of alternate to passion that you're talking about.
Yeah, I suppose.
What it may come down to is the entire model may just be flawed. Actually, as I often find, because you know what? We're talking about love. Literally thousands of years people have been trying to define it.
No, I realize that.
And have been largely unsuccessful, let alone something that fits conveniently in a triangle.
Well, it's a way to derive a typology. It's what you're saying is, well, there are these three elements that you have. When you have all three of these elements, you've got the consummate example of what love is.
And I find that very problematic.
Yeah, I do too. And then if you take a piece away one at a time, or this piece, or this piece, or this piece, or two pieces, then you get these other manifestations or types of love that might be part of the overall process to getting to consummate love, for example. And I have problems with all that too. But the reason it came up, the reason I brought it up, was because it seemed like they were making as part of the definition, whatever it's going to be, especially the consummate definition, is this idea of identity, like this is how love has always been experienced throughout all of human history. And there are lots of cultures that don't think about identity the same way we do. And I don't think that, I mean, for example, why wouldn't consummate love be, I love you and I want you to be happy? And that's going to be true whether or not you reciprocate it. If it turns out for you to be happy, it's for me to not even be in your life or to stay away from you, then that's what I'll do quite gladly because your happiness is what I'm concerned with. Why isn't that what a consummate love
would be? Well,
then
your issues with the consummate aspect, which I totally agree, is crap.
What's crap?
Their idea... A, of the consummate love, and B, that their definition of the consummate love is you have to have passion and intimacy and commitment. I don't understand why that would be the consummate love, other than those are the three categories they came up with, and they said, okay, when you have all three, clearly that's the best.
Well, but the thing is, a psychologist is coming up with this.
A bad psychology.
Well, and of course the implication here is this is how it works for everybody, for all human beings, for all time. But what I'm saying is there's some cultural
now, and I do think that
elements in here.
You may be reading into it with that concept as well.
Well, I don't know. I mean, why would it seems to me that's, I mean, I suppose it's possible, but I mean, when psychologists come up with these things, they're not saying in Western culture this is how it is. They're saying for human beings this is how it is.
Well, then again, shitty psychologists. But
it wasn't an anthropologist that came up with this, saying that this is how it is in the West. This was a psychologist, and I think the West is way too obsessed with identity.
That I'll give you.
Way too obsessed with it, I think it causes people problems like nerd rage.
I agree with that too.
I think people would be happier if they just kind of stop thinking that identity is the answer. You know, I guess it comes down to another general problem, which is most people, when they have a problem, and we're all guilty of this, I'm guilty of it.
Mm-mm. I've never had a problem.
When a problem comes your way, you, especially in the West, this is how we're taught to respond. You want to control it. when you can't control it. So you just make it worse. That's the thing that's going to make it worse is trying to control it, but that's exactly what you do. And it does get worse and worse and worse and worse. When what you really need to understand is you don't have control over it, you never had control over it, and actually when you let go of that notion, that's when you actually start feeling better, you know? When you understand that you don't have to sit here and try to control it, you can just let things go.
If I ever have a problem, I may try this. It sounds like a good technique.
You've got about 101 ways to be sarcastic, and it's truly stunning. I mean, most people are sarcastic in one way. You've got all this nuance.
I've got 99 problems, and gripping too tightly to my sense of identity ain't one.
No, I'm talking about... I sort of shifted gears there, and I was talking about our tendency in general to move toward trying to control something when it's challenging us, rather than maybe back away from it and let it play out.
Here's the thing. When I respond the way I do to this stuff, you always seem to interpret it as me disagreeing or disdaining your theory.
What are we talking about now?
When you say all the hour and a half stuff you just said, and I say, if I ever have a problem, I'll deal with it. You seem to look at that as you're saying, whatever. No, what is almost always the case is I 100% agree with you. I just think it's boring radio.
Well, no, I know that's exactly what you're doing.
Well, normally when I react, you react as though I've just said, no, that's not true. And then
I realize I respond that way, but that's just because of we're on the radio.
Because you're determined.
No, I have to say something. Right? I mean, I got to respond, so I might as well.
Well, if you want your $10.
Yeah. But I'm not. I mean, I didn't feel like you were disagreeing with me, per se. I thought you were making a smart-ass comment, because just as you said, boring radio, got to make a smart-ass comment. And so then I have to say something. So I say my thing.
You have to say your thing, because it's the same thing, and we already established it's boring.
I don't know. It's just what I do. Just like you do what you do.
We must teach you.
Teach me what?
To be not boring.
That is going to teach me not to come here and do the podcast.
Oh, you might have got me on that. At first I was like, is he threatening? No, he's not threatening.
No, I'm not threatening.
He's dissing the shit out of our podcast really cleverly. I did that. I send out these things at work. I send out to our division basically reminders when they have to submit their timesheets. And I do them interestingly because otherwise I get bored. Including, like, a while back I did one where I said, if you submit your timesheet by this time, I will donate $100 fictional dollars to the fictional charity of your choice. Things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason one I did is I said, okay, I don't have any sources, but I've heard people who turn in their timesheets by this point live longer. And I thought it was funny. And I had already had one earlier where I was going to say, help a child in need. Submit your timesheet by X time. These two statements are unrelated, but they're both good advice to follow. But something about that, when I actually typed it, was a real bummer. It was a real downer. I can't even quite explain why, but it just was not. So I switched over to this other one where I said, you know, people who submitted on time. And this person who I knew kind of replied to... I frequently get replies from some people who just say they like them, or people who, like, have a joke in response. Or, like, I got a few fictional charities that one time.
Huh.
But so this woman that only kind of responds, and she says, was that a threat? And I don't know her well enough, so for a split second I was like, oh my god, it kind of... And then I'm like, no... So I replied, and I was like, that's hilarious. I didn't even realize that. But yeah, no, it totally works that way. I was like, I hope I don't freak out a bunch of people. And then I told her the one I had with the child in need thing, and she responds, she's like, yeah, you definitely made the right. It's just, I mean, it's not, one could say it's a particular brand of wit, but ultimately it's just reminding you that there are children who do without in the world, which is sad. Mm. By the way, turn in your timesheets. Mm. Like, yeah. It's not. On a certain level, it's really funny, but it's like, it's a very, like, on a TV show, you would be like, oh my God, I can't believe that. You know, it's one of those things. As an email to all of my coworkers, it's a little weird. So, that was probably for the best.
Probably.
If you would like to have a more fluid sense of identity, go on the blog and talk to Jess. And a little bit to me, and sometimes to William, and occasionally to Beth. One not long ago, Azurtalon, I think, but we need more of you. Get out there. Do it. We want to know you exist and what you think. I want to know you exist. William wants to know what you think. Sorry. Also, write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and you too could get an entire conversation about nerd rage, I guess, if you wrote, like, the same question. Don't do that, though. Come up with your own thing. But do it. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, go to Facebook and like the hat. What else should they do?
I don't know.
Let's see how long we can stay silent before we actually stop it, and then they'll never, like, know. And
they could forward some of our videos to friends if they think they'd be fun to watch. It's been 2 weeks now since we posted the last video out of the 10 original series.
I was like, I thought it was just 1 week, but you mean in podcast time.
Yes, and I wonder if anyone in that time has taken the trouble to go ahead and tell us, hey, we like these, we want
several
you to make some more.
Several people have, and we like that. But the one person we were really hoping would did not. You know who you are, or maybe you don't. But if you didn't respond, we could be talking about you. So, don't you feel bad.
Yeah.
Make it up to us. I'll take cash. Or YouTube comments. Your own. I'm not saying, like, grab some already out there. I know what's out there. I don't want those. So yeah, go comment on YouTube also, and we will talk to you next week in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Last week. Actually. Also last week. Because that's when we were, oh my God.
Yeah.
Fucking hate time travel.
Well.
Time travel podcasting sucks. All right. Good night. This is what we do for you guys because we love you.
Yep.
All right. Go to bed.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.